Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 40 of Dogcast Radio. In this programme, we have an interview that will make you go, "Aw." It's about Stevie, a Bernese Mountain Dog who has been blind since birth.
Oh, I think he has a wonderful life. He is, every day for Stevie is an adventure. He wakes up and he's, you know, what are we going to do today? What's the adventure today? And his tail never stops wagging. And everybody he meets and every animal he meets is his best friend in the whole world.
We've got everything you need to know about a great new online pet community.
But really the site is for ordinary people who just have a love of pets, really, and what the site enables people to do is you can have a page for yourself, your pets can have pages, as many pages as they want, people can talk to people, pets can talk to pets. It's just there's all these different networks that people can form.
Plus, puppy playtime and the Dogcast Radio news. But before all that, we have Buddy's Diary. Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. You know, sometimes I think I don't understand some of my fellow dogs any better than I do humans. Don't get me wrong, there are lots of things about my humans I completely understand. They like a cuddle, they don't like my wet nose being pushed under their bedclothes, and if I sit very quietly and don't touch them, they might give me the last bit of their food. See, I know lots about them. But some things I just don't get. Socks, for instance. A huge amount of energy is wasted in our house on socks. They're all put into a big white box and got wet. Then they're brought out and hung in a big warm cupboard until they're made dry. Next, they're carried onto the bed and dumped in a big pile. Then they're pulled out one at a time and either thrown back again or rolled into a ball with another sock and thrown into a drawer until it's their time to be put into the big white box and made wet again. I know all this because I see it all. I may give the impression of merely lying idly by asleep, but I'm taking it all in. I also know what is involved in putting shelves up, and I could reel off the ingredients of several meals simply from attentive watching. But back to the main subject, socks, and what a waste of time they can be. It isn't socks in general that I'm objecting to. Socks can be great fun. I've been known to carry a sock in my mouth for the whole of a walk without my people realising it until I got home and spat it out. Needless to say, it was put straight into the big white box even though it was thoroughly wet already. A sock with a human at one end and me at the other playing tug of war, each pulling with all their strength, or at least pretending to, is how a sock is meant to be. Another really enjoyable game is when a human is trying to put their socks on, and I am trying to pull the sock out of their hands. My tall male human likes to play this game every morning, and he can get so overexcited that he has to shut me out of the room in the end. When socks are waiting to be put in the big white box and be made wet, they are gathered into a laundry basket, and that is wonderful because they smell. I can hardly put it into words, but to bury your nose into the washing basket is heavenly. And that brings me back to not understanding dogs. Star has been known to actually climb into the washing basket, even though she knows she'll be told off and fished out every time. But that's Star all over. Give her a rule and she has to break it. I'm sure when I was a puppy I was far better behaved than that. I tried to follow instructions, always be polite and obedient, but youngsters these days. Well, it wasn't like that in my day. And as if that's not bad enough, he gets me into trouble too. For example, one day recently, we were both lying on our bed, and all was right with the world. Until that is, I realised he was tearing at the wallpaper. That is a big no-no in our house. I know because when I was a pup, I tried it, and I was well and truly told off. I tried to tell Star, but would she listen? No, she just kept on scratching and biting, ripping the wallpaper. My tall female person hadn't noticed, but I knew that when she did, she would be angry. I couldn't relax, and in my worry, I started biting at my Kong, which, if you don't know, is a hollow rubber toy that is stuffed with lovely biscuits and treats that I have to get out. The next thing, Star is being told off for her wallpaper biting, and I'm being told off for biting the end clean off my Kong. The worst thing was, that was one of my favourite toys. I'll just have to hope they get me a new one for my birthday. Well, that or a pair of socks, I suppose. Oh well, till next time.
Thorns may hurt you, men desert you, sunlight turn to fog, but you're never friendless ever if you have a dog. Douglas Mallock. Training your dog can be a difficult business, and taking on a disabled dog has its own challenges. So we were amazed when we discovered Stevie, a blind Bernese mountain dog who has attained a very high level of training. Here's Stevie's owner, Jill, to tell you their story.
Stevie was a rescue at 10 weeks old. I got an email saying that there was a Bernese mountain dog puppy that needed a home right away, and he was totally blind.
Is that why he was in rescue?
Yes.
So somebody had him without realizing?
He was part of a litter of puppies, and the rest of the litter was sold. He was kept back because they didn't know actually what was wrong with him, just that he was having a hard time getting around the kennel with the other dogs, and I guess they took him to one of the veterinary hospitals, and he was diagnosed as having bilateral optic nerve hypoplasia, which means that the optic nerves from the eye to the brain never developed.
And so you took him on at 10 weeks old?
Right. And I remember driving out there thinking, I have no idea what I'm getting myself into, do I? And then as soon as he came out of the kennel, he just put his little paws on my shoulders and licked my face. And I said, oh, he's going to be no problem.
Yes.
He was adorable.
I bet. He looks beautiful. So how has it affected his life? And how much do you have to adapt for a blind dog?
You know, he really doesn't have, there's not all that much different about him. I'm very fortunate in that one of my other dogs, who's also a rescue, knew right off that there was something different about Stevie and took it upon himself to be Stevie's guide in the backyard and would, you know, get in between Stevie and a tree or Stevie and a fence and make sure that he didn't bump into anything. And he had to learn, I had to be very strong and have nerves of steel and not baby him. And he had to learn commands like easy and careful, so that he would stop or change direction. Easy meant slow down. You're going a little too fast. And he learned those within a week. He knew what careful and easy meant. And he really, you know, I monitor him. I don't let him go out and, you know, not be supervised. But he makes his way around the yard and makes his way around the house. In fact, I had him in a hotel, and we had gone to the Bernese Mountain Dog specialty when he was still very young. And more than the other dogs, he had mapped the hotel room in 15 minutes and knew where everything was and how to get up on the bed. We kept having to chase him off because he wasn't supposed to be on the bed. All the other dogs were like, yeah, that's kind of high. Not Stevie. He was right up on it.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I was going to say to you, how does he relate to other dogs? Does he have any problems?
Not at all. He doesn't, if another dog doesn't like him, he pretty much senses it and, you know, moves on to the next one. He gets along with other dogs really well. And for the most part, my dogs know that there's something different about him. You know, and I don't know how dogs process that, but they know, and, you know, they give him a break. I have one older dog who's, we call him a curmudgeon because he's a little cranky, and he just gives Stevie a lot of leeway. But for the most part, other dogs relate to him well. Sometimes females have a bit of a hard time, more so when he was younger, because they know there's something different about him, and it's pretty much instinctive in females that, you know, there's something wrong with this puppy, get rid of it. But, you know, not often, just on occasion. But he's really great with other dogs. He's, with the smaller dogs, he'll even lay himself down. And you know, he's a really good boy with other dogs. Very social.
Oh, I suppose you underestimate how much information they get through their nose as well, don't you?
Right, right. Yeah, he is very good with his nose. In fact, people have told me to take him to Canada and put a tracking title on him, because in Canada, a blind dog can get titles through the Canadian Kennel Club, whereas with the American Kennel Club, they can't. They're disqualified.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Now, you've trained Stevie. You say in your email that he's almost completed his companion dog title. So the
right.
Yeah. Now, can you tell me, what's the companion dog sports program?
The companion dog sports program is a combination. It's through the St. Hubert's Giralda shelter in New Jersey, and they started their own registry. It's kind of the best of both worlds. There's the UKC here and the AKC, the American Kennel Club and the United Kennel Club, and they both do obedience a little bit differently. And companion dog sports program kind of takes the best of both worlds. They also allow, there's also the Association of Pet Dog Trainers that does the rally obedience. And in rally obedience, you can talk to the dog and encourage the dog. The CDSP also lets you do that. You can encourage the dog while they're on the course. You can't give them more than one command, but you could say, good boy, you're doing great, you know, that kind of stuff. And so they've kind of taken the best of all the registries and put them together. And they also will make reasonable exceptions for, they have dogs with, dogs that are deaf, dogs that are blind, dogs that have, you know, bad hips, or, you know, three legs. Any dog can compete as long as they're not in pain.
So how do you set about training him for that? What sort of concessions have to be made for him?
What they do with Stevie is I'm allowed to talk to him more than you would be able to talk to a sighted dog, because Stevie heals to the sound of my voice. The recall exercise for the companion dog title is over a jump like it is in UKC, and so they let me take a pointing stick and tap the jump so that he can hear it. A dog that was sighted that was his height would have a much higher jump height, but they allow him to jump 4 inches because, you know, they understand that jumping his normal, I think it would be 18 or 20 inches would be prohibitive for a blind dog. So they let him jump 4 inches, and they let me tap the jump. And he's very smart. He learned very quickly to come up and sniff the jump and see where it was and then put himself over it. He's very bright with that.
Because I followed the link to the video of Stevie, and that is just amazing.
He is a very special dog. I can't take any of the credit for it. He trains very easily. I use all positive methods with him. Stevie never gets corrected for doing anything wrong. We just ignore it if he does it wrong, or say, let's try that again, and he gets rewarded if he does it right. Either he gets, you know, we have a little party and we tell him he's a good boy, or he gets cheese or a cookie. You know, depending on how hard the thing I'm asking him to do is, sometimes he just gets petted, but if he's doing something really hard like jumping, he definitely gets a cookie when we're training. But he is just the type of dog that wants to learn. He's always loved going to school. He loves working. Every day is an adventure for him.
And how close is he to getting the companion dog title?
He needs one more leg. The trials for the companion dog sports program aren't as readily available in my area as AKC and UKC. So I'm hoping in June he'll be back in the ring and he'll finish his title. He's also going to be, at the end of April, competing for the first time in rally obedience with APDT, the Association of Pet Dog Trainers. He's signed up for 2 runs in that. He'll be going for his level 1 title.
And what's involved in that?
Rally obedience is sort of like a doggy obstacle course, but not so much like agility. It's they put a series of signs on the course, and you walk from sign to sign in order, and you do what the sign says. So the sign may say, sit, down, sit. So you walk up to the sign, the dog sits and heel, you tell them to down, and then you tell them to sit again. Or it may be a call front and then either a finish left or a finish right, whatever the sign says. Or, you know, you leave some cones, healing the dog through the cones. It's a more fun, in my opinion, it's a more fun obedience because there's a lot more to it. And on any given day, it's going to be completely different. You're never going to see the same course twice.
That sounds good fun. We don't have that in the UK.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. If you go to rallyobedience.com, I think Canada is starting to work Rally into their CKC. I know our AKC just got it in the past couple of years. But so it may be coming to the UK. It is a lot of fun. It's the kind of sport where, you know, maybe you have a dog that they're great, but they're never going to go maybe further than novice obedience. But Rally, they can go really far because you can talk to them on the course, you can encourage them. In the AKC, you can give them unlimited commands, which I don't necessarily agree with, but if you have to sit there and say, sit, 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 it's okay in the AKC. And in the APDT, it's a little bit harder because you're still relegated to only being able to give one command. You can encourage the dog, but you can only give one command. So it's a little bit harder in the APDT registry.
And is this something that you do with your other dogs as well?
I do. I have one dog that finished his companion dog title, and he was never really great at obedience. It was a struggle for him to get his CD title in the AKC, but he did it, and I was just so proud of him. And he doesn't like Rally because it's different every time, and he likes to go in and have everything the same and know what's expected. My Roddy girl, who's also a rescue, she loves Rally. She has her Rally Novice title. She has her Rally Level 1 title in APDT. And in APDT, they give individual level championships, so she's going to be going for that. You have to qualify 10 times in that level. So she's a rescue, and she has some issues, so we don't take her off lead in public. But the nice thing about the low levels in Rally is that it's all on lead.
It's finding what is fun for your dog, isn't it?
Exactly. And tailoring the training to that particular dog. I really believe in trying to bring out the best in each dog and not expecting them that every dog's going to be the same or train the same because they all train differently. And Stevie, you know, of all my dogs, Stevie has taught me the most about just, if it doesn't work, move on, you know, and come back to it another day. You know, Stevie had some trouble with the words for commands. He can get right or with me, but left he just wasn't getting. And my friend started saying out with him, and out meant left to him. And so instead of left, he goes out, and that means step to the left. You know, it was just a change of word, but it was the way he, you know, related to it in his mind. And, you know, just he's taught me so much about adapting training and just, and he never gives up. He'll sit there and you know, and do the same thing over and over and over, trying to get it right. But sometimes the words just don't work, and we move on and try and think of something else the next time.
Because obviously, a lot of training, you sort of do signals as well, don't you, with them? And you know, they read body language and things like that very well. But of course, he's lost all that, hasn't he?
Well, I think that he hears the different intonations in my voice. And also, he can sense things that are close to him. Every once in a while, I'll touch him, and depending on where I'm touching him, he'll know which way to move. So if I touch him on the right side of his face, he'll move to the left, or the left side of his face, he'll move to the right. And we really only do that in training. The only time I touch him in the ring, and I've gotten an exception for that, is for the stay, because dogs really get that whole palm of the hand thing for stay. So I just lightly touch his nose on stay. But he really is good at adapting to, you know, just the different intonations in my voice and really being tuned in to, when we're on the course, we're a team, and I'm tuned into, you know, what he's doing, and he's tuned into what I'm doing, and it really works. But he's he's definitely a special dog. I wouldn't say none of my other dogs train as well as he does or as quickly as he does. If he was a sighted dog, I don't even know that he would be that good. But I think it's that he has that forced sort of dependence on me. And so he's learned that he really has to trust me. And so in obedience, he's just trusting me the way he trusts me to, you know, take him for a walk down the street.
What would you, I mean, I asked this question of sort of people that I talk to with what, you know, what we class as sort of handicapped or disabled dogs. What do you think his quality of life is?
Oh, I think he has a wonderful life. He is, every day for Stevie is an adventure. He wakes up and he's, you know, what are we going to do today? What's the adventure today? And, you know, maybe it's a walk around the block. Maybe it's, you know, playing ball in the yard or, you know, whatever we're doing that day or going to school or he's getting started doing some therapy dog work. He's registered with Therapy Dog International. He just sees every day as an adventure. His tail never stops wagging. And everybody he meets and every animal he meets is his best friend in the whole world. Really, he's just a very social dog, and he just finds joy in everything. And really, what a lesson to learn watching him go through life, because he doesn't let anything get him down. You know, if he bumps into something, it's like, okay, and he moves on, and he, you know, he started from the time he was a puppy carrying a stuffed animal in his mouth, and the first one was a cow. So I started, you know, we would say, Stevie, where's your cow? And he would carry his cow in case he bumped into something. He had that little cushion. And he just, you know, he just goes through life like it's one big adventure. You know, he definitely never feels sorry for himself because he doesn't know there's anything different about him. You know, there was the thing that drove that home for me was when he was a puppy, there was a rug he wanted to chew. And I would say, Stevie, leave that rug. And he would, you know, walk away. And the one time he went and he snuck over to the rug very slowly and he picked it up and he was being so quiet and he brought it into the middle of the room and I'm just watching to see what he's going to do. And he lays down and he starts to chew it and I said, Stevie, and he looked up and the look on his face said, how did you know? So I think in his mind, his world is everyone's world. He doesn't know what sight is. He uses his other senses.
Yeah. He sounds wonderful.
He's just an incredible dog.
If you'd like to have a look at this amazing dog in action, follow the link on the Dogcast site to a video of Stevie. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Blessed is the person who has earned the love of an old dog. Sidney Jean Seward.
And now, for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime. Hi, and welcome to puppy playtime. You can have a lot of fun with your dog and a hoop. We have taught Buddy to jump through one. First, we tempted him to walk through the hoop with treats, and gradually, we raised the hoop so he had to jump. A clicker can help you when you're training tricks like this, as it helps the dog to realise when it's done something you want. If your dog is young or old, or has hip or knee problems, just teach them to walk through, don't encourage them to jump. Another game you can play with a hoop is teach your dog to sit or lie down in one. Once he's got the idea, you can put the hoop further away and send him to sit or lie down in it. You can adapt this idea so that he fetches things from the hoop or takes things into it. Just keep the training sessions short, make it fun, use lots of praise and always end with your dog doing something right, even if it's just a simple sit. Do you know why dogs sniff bottoms? Well, once, long ago, before dog was man's best friend, all the dogs in the world went to a big party. They were all having a wonderful time and one of the games was pin the tail on the donkey. Each dog stuck its own tail on the donkey and there was a large juicy bone as the prize for a winner. But before the winner was announced, a fire broke out and all the dogs had to leave quickly. Rather than searching out their own tail, Each dog just grabbed the nearest tail. When a dog sniffs another dog's behind, he is checking whether the dog has his tail. If you have a funny idea for a story behind any dog behaviour, let me know. Till next time, have fun with your dogs and make sure your dog has fun with you.
The fidelity of a dog is a precious gift, demanding no less binding moral responsibilities than the friendship of a human being. The bond with a dog is as lasting as the ties of this earth can ever be. Conrad Lorenz. When you're out and about with your dog, do you fall into conversation easily with other dog owners? I certainly do. And now we have a fantastic new online community where we can indulge our canine conversations even more. Pet Street has been set up by Maurice Melzack, and he started by telling me where the idea came from.
Yeah, well, my background is I'm a zoologist and a documentary filmmaker, and over the years I've made lots of films about people and animals. I've pets and vets, zookeepers, even pest controllers. I've always been interested in the relationship people have with animals, and so I had an idea a few years ago of setting up a television channel, a digital channel for pet lovers, and it was going to be called the Pet Channel. And I was in the process of trying to raise money for that, and it was quite a long and laborious process and incredibly hard. And during that time, I couldn't help noticing that there was certain social networking websites that seemed to be coming up, like Friends Reunited and MySpace, websites that seemed to enable people just to get together and talk to each other and communicate with each other. And I was wondered if, well, maybe you could link the two concepts, pet owning and social networking, and set up a website that was specially for pet owners to network with each other. And that's how Pet Street started, and it's been going 8 weeks now, and it seems to be picking up, and people seem to be using it. So it's all very early days yet, but that's where we are.
You've certainly got some high-profile members.
Well, one or two. I mean, I am working on it. I mean, it's the problem is, because it is a website. I mean, it doesn't always attract the. It's difficult to attract celebrities, but and Bruce Forsyth joined because I know his daughter is very involved in this business of getting vets to ensure that every dog that comes in is checked for a microchip. Because that's quite an important thing. That apparently they don't always do that, and that can be quite an important way of tracking dogs that have been lost or stolen. And I'm obviously having celebrities on the site is quite useful because it sort of sparks a bit of interest in people. But really, the site is for ordinary people who just have a love of pets, really. And what the site enables people to do is you can have a page for yourself. Your pets can have pages, as many pages as they want. People can talk to people. Pets can talk to pets. It's just there's all these different networks that people can form. You can upload photographs of you and your pets, video. There's lots of different ways of communicating on the site, and that's basically what the site is about.
Mm-hmm. It's a brilliant idea because I find when I'm out with my dogs and you meet other, dog owners, you just naturally fall into conversation and, you can be there and you're talking about your dogs and whatever and the time passes. So, we definitely want to tell other people about our pets and sort of, and talk. So it's a brilliant idea to give us a medium for that on the internet.
Yeah, well, that's... I agree, obviously. I mean, for dog lovers, my idea was always that... you could find people in the area who keep the same breed of dog as you, or you might exchange information on feeding or healthcare or finding a decent vet, or getting together with people to go for a dog walk or help with dog sitting. And the rationale can apply to all different sorts of pets. But being a dog owner myself, I could certainly see how it could work, really. And the challenge for me now is just getting the word out there to let people know about Pet Street so they can come along and be part of the community. And that's that's what I'm, you know, that's my next task, really. Setting up the site is one thing, but getting people to actually participate and know about it and want to be part of the community is plan B, really.
Well, we'll do our best with that and try and help you. Do you have a dog of your own?
Yes, I've got an Airedale Terrier called Roxy, and she's six now, and is in a big part of my life, really. Whenever I, you know, whenever I work, I always say, "Can my dog come with me?" And if people say, "Oh, no, we don't want a dog in this around the office or something," then I probably won't go there, because I hate the thought of leaving her on her own at home during the day if I'm out. So, you know, we spend a lot of time together.
Mm. Oh, that's lovely. That's lovely. Mm. Mm. I think that's great because, you know, they are a big part of your life and they give so much to us. So it's nice to hear someone, you know, considers their dog as much.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, if you have one dog in particular, I mean, you know, you do form a bond with it. And really, I do worry about dogs that have to spend too much time on their own. I mean, it does happen occasionally. You have to leave your dog on its own, and that's just a part of the way it is, really. But if it's a regular thing, I think it's. I just feel sad for the dogs, really, that are on their own. And if she can come with me, I mean, she generally behaves all right. She's Airedale's generally great with people, and not always brilliant with other dogs. But that's something you've just got to live with, really.
Well, great, and we hope we can get some people to come to the site and basically talk to one another.
Yes, well, that would be fantastic, really, because I mean, it is, the site's free, doesn't cost anybody anything. It's a platform for people to meet other people that have this interest in common, really, keeping it any particular type of pet, really. So, I hope it'll catch on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as you say, as it develops, it can be a mechanism for helping people, as you say, sort of organise get-togethers alongside the communication on the internet.
Absolutely. And another thing I've got to say is that already quite a few of the big animal charities have come on board, like Wood Green Animal Shelter, Battersea Dogs Home, the Blue Cross. I think the Feline Advisory Bureau are about to come on board because they see the community that Pet Street wants to create as being their target audience, really. And so they're very interested in helping sort of nurture the whole project, really. And it might help in rehoming, for example. It might help in getting messages across about responsible pet ownership. There's all sorts of ways that a community of pet owners can work, really. And so that's what I'm hoping, you know, will be achieved in time, really. But I do know that a lot of these websites that you read about in the papers that have been sold for billions of pounds, like MySpace, whatever, they weren't overnight successes. They were going for quite a long time as they slowly and carefully built up their audience, and then suddenly all their usership took off. And I see Pet Street as being like that. It's going to take time for the membership to build up, but I hope it will do, and then it'll be a really great site.
Joining Pet Street is really easy. If I can do it, anybody can. If you do go on to Pet Street, Jenny, I, Buddy and Star are all on there, so do drop us a line. Happy chatting. I can't think of anything that brings me closer to tears than when my old dog, completely exhausted after a hard day in the field, limps away from her nice spot in front of the fire and comes over to where I'm sitting and puts her head in my lap, a paw over my knee, and closes her eyes and goes back to sleep. I don't know what I've done to deserve that kind of friend. Jean Hill.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. And the theme of today's programme seems to be travel.
Yes, the importance of microchips has been highlighted again with a recent heartbreaking incident. Labrador Coco accompanied her family on a holiday to France, and although at the time of leaving England her microchip scanned properly, when it was time for the return journey, scanners failed to pick up on the chip. After some frantic phone calls to the French and English authorities, Coco's owners, Richard and Jane Birtwistle, located a vet who would operate to remove the microchip. This was apparently the only option available to them to prove Coco was indeed Coco. Sadly, even though the operation was successful, the removed microchip still failed to scan. so Coco is now stuck in France, as she cannot be allowed back in while her identity is uncertain. The poor dog could now face a lonely and expensive 6 months stay in quarantine, bringing up the question of just how safe and reliable is the UK microchipping system.
For a young dog in China, travelling safely has become a real balancing act, quite literally. 8-month-old Gugu has taken to balancing on the back of his owner's bike for their daily ride along the Zhujiang River. Apparently, Gugu started his precarious method of travelling as a puppy, and will even tap his owner to indicate that he needs a toilet break.
A caravan or trailer vacation is usually a very peaceful way to holiday with your dog, but for one German dog and owner, it didn't turn out that way. When left alone in the caravan, the dog managed to turn the volume on the radio right up, causing neighbouring caravanners to complain, which eventually led to the police turning off the power supply to the caravan. Maybe the moral is, if you do take your dog on vacation, keep him with you, don't ever leave him locked up.
And on the subject of being locked up, there are 5 puppies who are currently inmates at a Queensland prison. Don't worry though, the pups will only be there temporarily, as part of the Pups in Prison programme. And once their sentence of 16 months hard training is finished, they will return to the Assistance Dogs Australia National Training Centre. This is a fantastic idea all round. The pups get a good training, the human inmates get many benefits, and at the end of the process, people with disabilities will have great assistance dogs.
And finally, if you're in America and need help with dog training problems, fear not, because Victoria Stillwell, or at least her television programme, is on the way. It's Meal the Dog proved very popular in the UK and the many other countries it's been aired in, and now the US gets the chance to see Victoria in action. Animal Planet will be showing the programme, so check your TV guides to make sure you don't miss out on some great dog training advice.
And that's all from us on the Dogcast News Desk. Goodbye.
Dogs are our link to paradise. They don't know evil or jealousy or discontent. To sit with a dog on a hillside on a glorious afternoon is to be back in Eden, where doing nothing was not boring. It was peace. Milan Kundera. We have recently welcomed a third dog into our family. If you've been listening for a while, you'll remember Julie and Pat Rodaway, who went and encountered wolves. Well, Pat's dog Tom has guided him for over 8 years, but due to minor health problems and age, has had to retire. He came to live with us a couple of weeks ago and has been settling in well. Star danced up to him and planted her front paws on his nose. Tom made it clear through growling accompanied with a variety of body language, followed by some play bows, that he was not going to put up with any nonsense from her. Although Star is used to much more tolerance from our Labrador buddy, she immediately recognised that Tom is made of sterner stuff and treats him with respect. This is not to say they aren't good friends. They have spent hours together out in the sunshine, lying in the garden, or simply patrolling round, checking everything smells as it should. Buddy has been slower to accept this newcomer. Things went brilliantly for the first 48 hours. Then it was as if Buddy thought, you could go home now. Gradually, things have calmed between them, as Buddy has come to realise Tommy's friendly and is here for good. Tom has taken it all in his stride, and has been enjoying exactly the relaxing retirement we all wanted for him. There are many differences between bringing in a grown-up dog with a fully formed personality as opposed to a puppy, and I've learned a lot and enjoyed seeing Tom forge relationships with us all. I know it's been a huge loss to Pat, and I'd like to thank him for trusting us with his well-loved dog. Tom will, of course, be featuring in Dogcast now, and watch out for him in Buddy's Diary soon. Just what is Buddy's take on all this? Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022.
from any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What do you get if you cross a dog with a Concorde? A jet setter.